Would you like to ski Antarctica? Get you snowed under with work? Do you dream of a vacation at the bottom of the ocean? But you can't float the bill? Have you always wanted to climb the mountains of Mars? But now you're over the hill? Then come to Recall Incorporated, where you can buy the memory of your ideal vacation cheaper, safer, and better than the real thing. So don't let life pass you by. Call Recall for the memory of a lifetime.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
And welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me as always is Trish Coughlin.
Hello.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Hi. Hello.
So enthusiastic.
Wait, do we know that's who we are?
I don't know. I assume I'm Jason Bishop. My brother tells me I'm Jason Bishop. But
isn't he just a plant?
But he doesn't look anything like you.
No, that all could be implanted. It would explain a lot.
It would explain an awful lot.
It would, actually.
You might have only come to be when we started recording this podcast.
And you know what? Maybe
whose idea
real.
Was it?
Oh, God.
I thought it was mine and yours.
Yeah, but where were we before then?
I don't know. That's just because I'm getting old.
True.
No, we're not constructs of your imagination.
We do not have Total Recall.
No, which is actually the subject of our show today, Total Recall from 1990 and Total Recall, the remake from 2012, based on the story by Philip K. Dick called We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
Nice.
It's funny. Philip K. Dick writes great stories for film. As we know, there's another remake coming up based on another one of his stories.
Yes, and actually the sequel to Total Recall that never actually happened. Well, it did. It just got repurposed and became Minority Report.
Yes. Yep.
So I'll get that out of the way, that little factoid.
Yeah. Right, it's not a remake. It's a sequel to...
It was intended to be a sequel, yeah. And it was also based on another story by Philip K. Dick called Minority Report. The Minority Report.
Yeah. And strangely enough, with Colin Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah. That is another
Blade Runner, which is, I guess, it's not a reboot. I guess it is a sequel, but it's another Philip K. Dick story.
Electric Sheep.
Do Andrews Dream of Electric Sheep? Yeah.
I was like, I got it wrong. I started late in it.
And having read Philip K. Dick, the movies are far easier to digest.
And I've read some of it, and I don't know. I like the short stories.
Yeah.
So, which is mostly what these are pulled from anyway.
Yeah, it's because it's getting so dense.
Yeah, I mean, Blade Runner makes just a wee bit more sense than the story it's based on. Just a little bit.
Just a little
bit. But, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more Blade Runner in a roundabout way, because I think it really informs the look of the remake. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but it definitely does.
Yeah.
Especially the colony aspects.
Yeah, colonies and the synthoids.
Yeah.
That I think it's a kind of a precursor to Blade Runner by maybe 100 years or so.
Yeah.
I mean, in my mind.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, but it's established that look that society, yeah, that density to human.
And I think that was the intent, was to kind of tie the worlds together in, you know, thematically anyway, in their look without being overtly saying it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because I'm sure the rights and stuff were probably awkward.
Oh, yeah. As we know, as we've talked on this podcast, the rights can be, an arduous and gargantuan process of weird craziness.
Actually, I think Blade Runner predates Total Recall because Total Recall takes place in the 2100s and Blade Runner takes place in 2045
or something?
2045 and then 2080-something.
Okay, I didn't look up the chronology.
But that would make sense because Ellie doesn't exist in the Total Recall remake because it's been destroyed by the wars.
Yes.
So it could still work, right? I mean, they don't reference replicants necessarily, but they certainly...
No, and I mean, when I watch that movie too, Len Wiseman makes reference to Paul Verhoeven with the... He's got the robo-dick comment. So, you know, he's referencing a few other movies other than Blade Runner in the to inform the look of his version of Total Recall.
For sure.
So, Total Recall 1990, directed by Paul Verhoeven. You might better remember him from RoboCop and Starship Troopers.
Yep.
Man, that guy was ruling the 90s until he made a movie about strippers.
Yeah.
Showgirls.
A terrible movie.
Showgirls.
It's a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, it's weird. It's a car crash. You can't look away.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, he liked working with Sharon Stone on this film because he cast her again later on.
Yep.
In Basic Instinct, oddly enough, because the lovemaking scene earlier in the film between Sharon Stone and Schwarzenegger, Verhoeven wanted some more skin and she wouldn't do it. So even he cast her in Basic Instinct and he's like, yeah, I got my revenge later on.
Asshole.
Sharon says that whole leg crossing scene she didn't know about. And I'm like, well, you don't wear underwear to your scenes.
That's weird. I don't know much about setting up cameras. You do.
I can also see Paul Verhoeven maybe pulling a fast one on her.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We can see that of Paul Verhoeven. Let's just not.
Yeah. No. It's that's totally.
He did make an interesting transition from really fun, slightly campy sci-fi action films to mediocre to bad erotic thrillers.
There's a guy who should have stayed in science fiction. He's masterful at it. He paints a really detailed world when he's doing science fiction.
Especially given the limitations of the tech, the CGI and stuff when he was making these films.
This was probably the first example of photorealistic CGI in a film, and that's mainly in the scanning scene with the skeletons in that chase sequence, and one of the last films to use high detail miniatures as well. I mean, it was the second most expensive film at that point in time in 1990.
It was real expensive at
$65 million. I mean, it paid off too because the thing grossed worldwide $261.4 million. So totally paid off in a big way. I can certainly see why they were at least thinking of a Total Recall too.
Well, you're in apex Schwarzenegger time,
but given the ambiguity of the ending of this film, I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
you know, to have that defined ending and then Total Recall 2 and now he's a thought police cop, and then you know it all happened. Or did it? I don't know. That's one of the beauties of these movies.
That's what I like.
I mean, we're going to bounce around, I'm bouncing right to the end of the remake.
Because
at the end of the remake, I really was left more in doubt than I was in the original.
See, I think I was the opposite direction. I think, and maybe because I'm a little closer to the original, because I had the argument the very first time I saw it coming out of that theater. Is you're like, did it happen? I didn't have that same reaction with Total Recall. And maybe it's because you already have foreknowledge because it's a remake and they're going to try to be ambiguous. But I didn't think it was as handled as well in the. And I like the remake. Don't get me wrong. I really like the remake. But, you know, in my mind, if I was to say, you know, to you guys, actually, I'll ask you the question outright. The original Total Recall, do you think it happened or was it a dream? Was it part of his recall?
It depends, because I've talked my way into different ways of thinking about it, where it's sometimes I think it's sort of in his head, because everything, even though it's an arduous process and stuff goes wrong, it does all work out for him. And plus, he manages to evade a lot of capture. He manages to shoot people directly in the head all the time and not miss.
Yeah. Oh, well, blue skies on Mars. Like, Mars gets an atmosphere in 10 minutes.
Yeah, then that shouldn't happen.
Like, things that just shouldn't happen. And when Dr. Edgemar shows up and basically predicts the rest of the film.
Yes.
Like, this is going to happen if you don't wake up. And all of it does.
Yeah.
So there's more left in my mind saying, and then the fade to white.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the theme music for the recall commercial fading into the credits. And I'm like, fuck, he just died.
Yeah, I don't know.
He died in the chair.
And I mean, and that's the beauty of this, that movie, of both movies, is that ambiguity. Is it real or is it recall?
I feel there's, even though they put the doubt in your head in the other film, I think it, you know, if I was to say which one, who died or who stayed in the chair and who lived through it, I'd say the remake probably happened versus the other one.
I was more inclined to believe the remake.
And it does explain, like in the original, it explains the more fantastic moments of the film. And maybe it's just the way to cover some of the more convenient moments in the film as well. Even the director says, yeah, it's a dream. But other members of the film say it's not. So, like, I don't think there's a defined thing that, I don't think they actually went in saying one way or the other. It's just they deliberately tried to keep it ambiguous.
Oh, true. And if you're going to have if the cast, people who are in it saying, like, it was real, if you want to really sell it, the people in it who are representing these things have to believe it's real, that they're real, that they exist.
Mm.
And that's the whole idea.
Yeah.
Like, there's a Twilight Zone episode, and I can't remember the name of it, where a guy keeps talking about how he has the same dream all the time, and he goes through a trial, and then he's going to get executed, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and this all part of his dream, and these people are sitting there, and they're having their own lives.
And he's, like, living it over and over again, isn't he?
Yeah, and they're having their own lives. They're like, well, how can it be a dream if we're living our own lives here? And the guy's like, no, you went home and you had like a steak. You were going to have like roast, but it wasn't ready yet. He tells them all the details of this dream because he's perceiving it and experiencing it. And then it all starts again. Mm-hmm. So all these people don't realize they actually are part of the dream. But because they exist there, this is their existence. They believe they exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the precept of this whole movie, right? You're right. Is it real or is it not?
Mm-hmm. And this beauty of the movie itself is you can just enjoy it as a straight-up action sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
Don't have to worry about that stuff. But if you want to, like, it leaves you thinking at the end.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more going on that's just there.
It's certainly not the major thrust of the film, but I like that they keep putting it in there.
Well, and it's also the concept of, like, who really are you?
Yeah.
Like, can you just make a new person by putting new memories in? Or, like, is the core of who you are still there?
Yeah. Well, and the person that's Hauser compared to Douglas Quaid, they're very different people.
Oh, yeah.
Very different people.
Mm-hmm. And so can you completely rewrite a person's personality?
Yeah, you can't. Oh, and sorry, if we're talking 90s action movies, I think it's The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis, where she's this super badass spy, and she got deep undercover where she was like a kindergarten teacher, and then it's like 8 years later she has a kid, and like part of the thrust of that movie is that cover was chosen by her because like it was a secret desire of what she really wanted to have in life. So is that also part of it? Does that make you who you are?
Yeah, and I mean, for what is an Arnold Schwarzenegger action movie, that's pretty deep.
It's pretty cerebral when you really look at it. There's some deep themes in here.
And that's why I think this is like, you know, I'm a huge sci-fi buff, but I think this is one of the more important ones that came out of the 90s.
Oh, for sure.
Because it still holds up. I mean, maybe some of the effects don't as much as I'd like to think they do.
Some of them really kind of do.
Yeah.
Like the bulging eyes at the end, I still love it. It disgusts me, but I love it.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of it's great. It's still a very entertaining movie. It was when they said they were going to do a remake, I wasn't overly happy about it. You know, think in my back of my old brain of mine where I'm thinking that wasn't that long ago. Why would they do it a 1990s movie? Oh wait,
it was that long ago.
5 years ago.
Oh wait, I've gotten older. How did this happen?
27 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, the original Total Recall is a well-loved film in my house. like well loved, watched probably a few times a year.
I can say that about most Schwarzenegger films in my house.
It's a big part
of my upbringing.
Right. Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned this because
you and I probably saw the movie together. We've known each other that long.
So. Yeah, it would have been right around that time that we started hanging out. So yeah, it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great film, but I really enjoyed the remake. And one of the things I respect about it is they did not try to remake the original film. They made enough changes that
the basic concept is still there. Like, people think taking Mars out of it was a big deal. I'm like, no, that's just part of the MacGuffin of his recall. You could have put that anywhere and it wouldn't have changed anything. So they changed the little bit of the politics with Cohagen. They take out Mars and turn it into another territory. So his motivations have switched a little bit. He's not finding alien artifacts. They've taken some of the more fantastical things out of it, but what drives Cohagen is still very selfish.
It's still power and finance.
Yeah.
But part of, I think, the difference between the two is it's about the vulnerability of the populace on Mars. They're extremely vulnerable, whereas in the colony, they're really only vulnerable because of that fall device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's sort of easily, it's more about the transport between the two areas. Where it is in the original, it's Mars and Earth, where it's literally two separate entities.
Yeah.
Well, and the control that Cohagen has over the people of Mars with the air and everything, that element is definitely removed from the remake.
And while I'm taking Richter. I don't know why I couldn't say it now. Richter.
Just say Michael Ironside.
Yeah, Michael Ironside. You know what? I'll run the trailer here in a second. But taking Richter. I'm going to have a trouble with that this whole show, I think. Taking Richter out and absorbing the character into Laurie's character in the remake, I thought was quite nice. They did that a few times where they've absorbed some characters into other characters.
It's a long movie, but it makes it kind of tighter when it comes to characters.
Well, it allowed Len Wiseman to throw some crazy chase sequence stuff in it. I mean, it's far more of a chase movie than anything else.
And to make
else.
Laurie more dangerous than she was.
Sure. And I got to say, you know,
Kate Beckinsale.
She kicks ass.
She does intense.
She does action very well. And there's a reason that the Underworld movies are so popular, and it's partly because she is so good at those physical roles.
Yeah,
Biel, both of them.
We'll get to Len Wiseman and his successes and crimes in a little bit here.
But his trash is enjoyable to me.
But, you know, despite the fact he's constantly casting his wife in his movies, good on you, because she's really good at it. So, I don't know.
She's so watchable.
He might actually have a weird relationship, because I think maybe he's married to Kate Beckinsale and Bill Nighy, but we'll get to that.
That sounds like the most amazing marriage ever.
I knew you'd like that.
I want to be a part of it. Where do I sign up?
Well, talked about polyamory last week.
Yes.
Yeah.
While she gets on her Google device and tries to figure out how to marry Bill Nighy, I will run
and
the
Kate
trailer.
Beckinsale. I'm one of both of them.
Man, yeah, the girls in the remake, I gotta say, they did cast that very well, because they're both action adept, they own their scenes, and just as well as Sharon Stone and Rachel Ticketon.
Rachel Ticketon is good, but it was the one thing rewatching the original, watching Sharon Stone try to throw a punch is really upsetting.
Which is interesting, because she trained her ass off for that movie. She trained and learned some martial arts to do that film. Yeah. And she even got awarded for it.
But watching her curl her hands in as she's about to throw a punch is just so upsetting to watch. It's because it's arduous. I'm just like, just straighten them, Sharon. Just straighten them. You can do it.
Well, for all the work she did, she just never got that one.
Yeah, no, but that's not... I don't know. I don't think of Sharon Stone as more of like an action star. I like her as like the more cerebral cat and mouse
thing. I don't think she ever was known as an action star. I mean, she certainly got, I think, noticed because of this film in a pretty big way, and it really popped her career. But up to that point, she was in...
She was in, what was it, King Solomon's Mines.
Thank you. That's what I was about to say. The Alan Quartermain movies. Yeah. I think she was in two of those.
Yeah.
And...
playing the damsel in distress.
Yeah, and those didn't do very well, but
no, this
well
was,
they were canon and they were cheap. And they
certainly, yeah. And yeah. I mean, this so is where people to... started seeing her, and then she just popped like right after this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then well, Basic Instinct. After this, she popped, and then Basic Instinct just launched her.
Yeah, exactly. She went nuclear. All right, well, I'm going to run the trailer for Total Recall. We'll get into some stats, and we'll talk more about both these movies.
Your mind. It is the center of your life. It is everything you hear. Everything you see. Everything you feel. It is everything you are. How would you know if someone stole your mind?
Arrest that woman!
Ready for a surprise.
We can't let him run around. He knows too much. They've got your bug.
I get a lock.
There! And the bug's in your skull.
Take this thing out of the case and stick it up your nose. Don't worry, it's self-guiding.
Got him. Around here.
Look who's talking.
They erased your identity and implanted a new one.
If I'm not me, who the hell am I?
He's got a hologram!
Welcome to Johnny Cab.
Drive.
Where can I take you tonight? Please fasten your seatbelt. I want Quaid delivered alive for reimplantation.
That's for making me come to Mars. You wouldn't hurt me. After all, we're married.
Consider that a divorce.
We hope you enjoyed the ride.
Total Recall from 1990. I can't believe it was that long ago now. Paul Verhoeven directed, screenplay by Gary Goldman, based on the story by Philip K. Dick. There was also original screen story and screenplay were by Dan O'Bannon, John Povill, and Ronald Shusett. Whew. this has been shopped around for quite a while. The rights existed around early 70s.
Yeah.
They were trying to get this thing off the ground, and Dan O'Bannon and John Povill, you know, they wrote the screenplay, but it was quickly realized that the technology didn't exist to make this movie properly at that point in time that they wanted it, they had envisioned. So they set it aside and went on to do a little franchise that never took off called Alien.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that once in, like, a small theater.
Yeah, yeah. So
you can find it in the delete bins at Walmart.
Exactly. And, you know, the later screenplay, Gary Goldman, he did Big Trouble Little China as well. Oh, so
love that movie.
Certainly explains a lot of the humor in this movie.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And, you know, add Paul Verhoeven's detailed sci-fi eye. You know, he likes to put a lot of things in the background and the screens on the trains. And
oh, yeah.
You know, he does a pretty fleshed out world. Even their Mars stuff was based on what they knew about Mars at the time. So
yeah, I love. Yeah, the imagining of it was really good. Like, it felt like Yeah, like yeah. I love the heft and the realism yeah. of it.
They, actually, the Mars bases, they figured, they actually went and talked to people, if you were going to live on Mars, how would you do it? And that's why so much of it's built within rock faces, within craters and stuff, is because it would protect from the radiation on the planet.
And it would also reduce the mm-hmm. amount of materials you have to use to create your air domes.
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
And they even show that, how they kind of tied the air dome into the rock wall at one point right. In the movie there, so you can sort of see how they kind of conserve space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was looking up and I'm like, well, especially near the end of that film when they're being shunted out in onto mm-hmm. Mars, I'm like, well, would they freeze to death? Would they run out of oxygen? Would the radiation kill them? I'm like, you know, they probably would have imploded yeah. from the pressure change a lot quicker than they did. Well, they didn't. But I was like looking up, I'm like, well, okay, let's assume they're near the equator.
Okay.
Of the planet, because in the summer, because okay. so on a nice bright summer day, it might hit about 20 degrees, but at night, they're still going to hit around minus 100
yeah, degrees. Yeah, but it's the most stable band.
Yeah, Celsius.
It's still the most stable band on the planet that's going to have the least
yes.
variation.
Yeah, I mean, if you're near the poles, you know, you're talking minus 175,
mm-hmm.
and probably not getting a whole lot warmer.
No.
No.
Cold as all get out.
Yeah, so anybody who's thinking about relocating, you better like the fucking cold.
We're Canadian.
And we're still not going.
No, I'm still not going. That's a little too cold for me.
I don't know. I don't know. The more I look at the people on Earth, I'm like, no, I'll brave a little cold.
Although, you know, the sunny 20, that's about my comfort zone. That's yeah. nice. But if it Beautiful. Only gets that hot, like that's a warm day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're like, if you get it like a lot of sun and it goes through a dome and it's like you're a cat in a sunbeam, just imagine yeah. a little tiny bit warmer.
For you Americans, it's about 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. I can never do the conversion.
It's only because I read it.
Okay.
I can't do it either. I can approximate because, you know, I did a lot of traveling in the U.S. as well, so.
Nice. I know, I think about minus 40, we both line up.
Sure. Yeah. I never traveled when it was that cold.
Nor should you.
Outside of my house, I wouldn't go out of my... Jesus.
Hey, you bundle up, you're going to be fine.
So, this movie, of course, stars Arnold Schwarzenegger as Douglas Quaid, Sharon Stone as his wife, Lori. Mm-hmm. She's a shitty wife.
In quotes, wife.
Wife. Michael Ironside as Richter. Hey, it's back. I can
yes.
say it again. Yay. Marshall Bell as George.
I love him.
Hey, George. Rachel Ticketon as Melina. Ronnie Cox as Velos Cohagen. He actually has a first name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they ever say it, but...
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Mel Johnson Jr. as Benny. And there's a few guys in the background I kind of think are worth a mention. Debbie Lee Corrington is Thumbelina, the little person prostitute.
Okay.
Who we all...
I loved her.
I think she was great. Ray Baker was Bob McLean. He's the dude who runs Recall.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recognized his face, but I couldn't remember his name.
And his voice. His voice yeah. is so distinctive.
Mm.
Dean Norris... who was yes. Tony, most of you will remember him from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
There's a little tie-in here.
There is a tie-in here, because in the remake, Bryan Cranston is in the remake, so there's your tie back to Breaking Bad and Dean Norris.
It's all connected, people.
Mickey Jones did a lot of television and stuff at that time. He was the burly miner.
Oh, yes. See, I knew him, too.
Yeah,
but he was mostly
train.
TV, right?
Yeah. Robert Picardo was the voice of the Johnny Cab.
Johnny Cab.
even as a robot voice, he was kind of owning his scenes.
Oh, for sure.
And Roy Brocksmith was Dr. Edgemar, who was kind of the frontman voice of Recall in the ads.
Nice.
Yes. Which you heard at the
A lot
start
of people
of this
in
show.
This cast. A lot of people.
Yeah, it's a big cast, and they do shave that down in the remake just, I think, to...
Expediency.
For expediency's sake, it was... And I get it. It works fine
oh, yeah.
for, you know, they took out the Mars thing, and they kind of meshed some characters
oh,
together,
for sure.
and it all works really well. I think they did a fine job on that as well, mm-hmm. and I will go through that a little bit later on.
Like, I think it's a weird thing. Like, I know people were upset, like, they took out the Mars thing. And I don't know. I like the remake if I thought it was a standalone film. I think mm-hmm. having it as a remake, that's the one part it's kind of bothersome, but I don't think it's really a remake. It's a great standalone film. Like, if it was the first one.
When you watch that, now we live in a world, when they did this, you got to think about all the films that have come out on based on Philip K. Dick stories, mm-hmm. Blade Runner being the most specific one, and you know, they're obviously basing on Total Recall, and Minority Report had also been out at that mm-hmm. point as well. And Minority Report, I think, still kind of has a Blade Runner look to it.
Yeah.
And I think that really informs what's going into the remake. They really want it to look like mm-hmm. it takes place within that Philip K. Dick world.
And you can tell that by the flying cars.
Yeah.
Like, they're very similar in look and feel.
Yeah.
Even to the Blade Runner movie.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we're coming in now, like, you do the high detail that was already in the original, and, you know, later on we've got Fifth Element and stuff. So, you know, you got the flying cars and Fifth mm-hmm. Element, and I mean, that certainly had a very Philip K. Dick inspiration behind it as well.
Even the look, even the look of Fifth Element with the tall, the city's mm-hmm. going up because mm-hmm. there's nowhere else to go. So, I mean, yeah, you can tell that Lupuson is even inspired a little bit by Dick's vision of the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's a whole concept is we're running out of space. And that's a very big theme in this movie.
Yeah.
Especially in the remake.
In that world that Philip K. Dick is imagining. And that's true. That's just what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. So I certainly appreciated the fact that they tried to mesh it in there. And not in an overt way. They weren't saying that it was tied to any of these other films. But I think it certainly inspired the look of the film. So you could feasibly say that, yes, this is the Philip K. Dick universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, between the original and the remake, it's different. But
and yeah, I think they were trying to make it a little bit closer to maybe way people imagine the story was.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, though, the original film was certainly the closer to the book mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. the fact that it did take place on, the second half did take place on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think in order to do a remake, sometimes you just, in order to be effective, you don't want to just go whole cloth exact same story, because then you're like, I've already seen this, right?
You're right.
So they tried to change it enough that it still kept the heart of the story without retelling the exact same story.
Well, right? And like you say, yeah.
It is the exact same story.
It did keep the same. Yeah, there's some major differences,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
But what it did Absolutely. Was kept the very main themes, which is who are you? What's happening? Like, and there's a colony.
And the corruption of power.
Corruption of power, a colony of people who were under the thumb of some terrible guy Chancellor. That just runs everything.
The Chancellor of the Unified Federation of Britain. United Federation of Britain.
Yeah, so like those themes are just, they're in both movies very overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And they did a good job of keeping that without having to completely retell the original story. Because I think mm-hmm. that they realized that the Schwarzenegger film is iconic in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were just to straight up remake that, even if they were just to cut out the sight gags and the humor, it still would have felt like the same, they were just trying to copy the movie.
I also think alternatively is because of the timing of this movie. Like, we got stuff on Mars that we're looking at right now. Like, would it really land the same way as the Mars we imagined in the 90s?
And maybe 2012 was just a little too early for the film, because the remake didn't do very mm-hmm. well. Like, it had a budget of $125 million and had a worldwide gross of $183, just under $184 mm-hmm. million. So it actually lost money if you start putting in your advertising budget and
distribution.
Stuff. Distribution. So it lost money. It's a solid movie, because I think, you know, he does try some different stuff in there while still making his nods. Just maybe the timing. I mean, it was a remake nobody wanted to see, and I think that's what hurt the film the most.
It definitely did.
Because it's a pretty good movie. Like,
It's a solid action film.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly enjoyed how he would make nods to the original film, but use them in his own way. Like, now he's got the synth robots as most of the men of Richter and Cohagen's.
Yeah.
So he's got all these synth bots. And that really informs part of the plot as well.
Because
they're using this to build an army to send down to the colonies so they could just raise it so they could have more room for the people of the Federation.
Well, yeah, like, I think this is what we're saying is we cover this a lot, where there's people want to remake beloved scripts, and like Total Recall is quite beloved. So I think if it hadn't had been sold as a Total Recall remake, I think it would have done better because the story's similar, but it's different enough. It is its own movie.
Yeah.
That might have helped it rather than anything else.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to get to some of the nods he made there in the movie. Like, Richter loses his arms on the elevator. They have that something similar happened with one of the synths in their six-way elevator chase as well.
Which was so much fun to watch.
It was lot of fun.
I kept thinking of Galaxy Quest. Yeah. Remember the end of Galaxy Quest where they're trying to go through the end? Like, why is this even happening? Who would put this here?
Yeah, that's right. They are nuts, those elevators. They had
the
three-breasted woman and, you know, different girl, but I mean, she did a really good job kind of having even some of the facial mannerisms of the original.
Yeah,
it was just a nod. It doesn't make a lot of sense in this version of the movie.
Well, it does.
I mean, I guess body modification would be a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it would. Yeah, well, it is
now.
Yeah.
So. They have the phones in their hands.
Yeah.
Which was so cool.
Oh, no, that was only the agents.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's still a modification.
Yeah, that is a modification.
Those are modifications that humans have at this point.
Yeah, so the context makes sense. The modification is a little questionable.
She wasn't a mutant like they were in the the original film, but I would think that was a modification she did for her job, her profession.
Exactly. Yes,
but that was a nice nod. She's not a major character. She just shows up for that scene as a nod, and then it's gone. The changing of the head. Now they don't have that big opening head thing that they had in the original film. It's just a hologram, but the lady in the same basic outfit, and she even has the same line, 2 weeks is there, but he's actually standing behind her.
Yes.
And that was a beautiful misdirect.
So yeah, it was a beautiful misdirect, because for anybody who loves the original,
because you're looking for it.
Yeah, you are looking for it. And she looks amazingly like the woman from the original one. It was kind of creepy.
It's a great misdirect because you're automatically going to think, oh, they're doing that scene. And then he's standing behind her. That's great.
If you're paying attention earlier in the film,
you see that Asian fellow in the ID.
Yeah.
Packet.
Exactly,
Yeah, I was paying attention.
Yeah, as was I, obviously, because I pointed it out. But,
those are lovely nods.
They are lovely nods, and there's just enough of them to acknowledge that we do love this film, the original film, but we just wanted to update it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of stuff that's very different. I mean, both of them are essentially giant chase sequence movies.
They are. I will say that I found the remake maybe about 20 minutes too long. It really dragged. They dragged those action scenes.
That's my thing. Sometimes there's a bit too much action.
I think maybe they trimmed out too much fat to give us those action sequences. I do agree with you that every time I got to a sequence, they're really good. They're really good, and they're like, oh, we're still here.
Yeah.
Well, you'd get an action sequence, and then you get that small breather. We're like, okay, so we're back in the story. No, just another action sequence. And I'm like, wait, no. Just let me have a bit of movie before you go back into it.
They don't give you a lot of time. Like, that's something I appreciated with Verhoeven's, is you can still have a big sci-fi film and have quiet moments.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, he's looking through his ID packet and pulling some shit out of his nose. Like, he does that with his hand where he's pulling out the tracking / phone device.
Well, you can't redo the nose thing. It's so iconic.
It is.
It's disgusting.
And I'm glad that they changed that to something a little different, because it was still disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and you know, going back to your whole original question about whether it was real or not, that's one of the scenes from the original that makes me wonder if it was real or not. Because, there's no way that you could pull something that big out through your nasal cavity.
Why did it have a cap on it when it just falls off and it was so much smaller?
Yeah,
that's the one part that bothered me.
Like, they put it in there just to make it more torturous.
But I know why it's done like that, because visually it's freaking amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why it's done like that. I mean, you can get into a nasal cavity, and like, I don't know how he didn't have breathing problems. That was my other problem. But the cartilage, like, stretching out, like, if you'd break your nose.
No, there's no way that he wouldn't have be bleeding excessively from his nose after that whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And again, makes one of those things that makes you go, maybe it is recall, right? Because there's no physical way that that could happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you get like a nasal polyp taken out, you got to stuff stuff up there to keep it from bleeding out.
Yeah, but it set up a great scene where they're chasing the rat, which...
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Which is a nice sort of double entendre, right?
Oh, yeah, true.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I kept thinking of our talk about The Departed when I was watching that. I'm like, oh, I remember The Departed. And then he shoots the rat, and I'm like, oh, that's probably what should have happened at the end of The Departed.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about that. Shoot that fucking rat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, there's I just want to go back to that because that was one of the things I wanted to mention. We were talking about it earlier. Was that scene right there is the one that really makes me question whether or not it was recall.
Yeah. It's weird. I think this is one of those movies you have to watch a few times to catch those little bits where you're like, oh, maybe, is it? Isn't it?
And that's what I really like. It's so rewatchable. Like, I have seen the original Total Recall. I probably didn't even need to rewatch it for this podcast because I've seen it so many times that it's pretty ingrained in my head. But I'd only seen the remake.
But you
can because
you want to.
I'd only seen the remake once.
Yeah, I had to watch that.
Yeah, when it was in the theater. So that was it. And so there was a lot there I didn't remember. I mean, I remembered that the structure was essentially the same, that they trimmed out the fat. Yeah. There was a full-on action sequences that I had completely forgotten.
Yeah.
The highway chase. That actually kind of bugs me, that highway chase sequences and Melina just shows up.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked how.
But that's your recall moment.
It is. Yeah. And that is a recall moment because it's too convenient. I liked in the original film, Douglas Quaid has to seek her out.
Oh, and he left. He leaves himself clues. At one point, he writes
to find her.
He's looking at the little poster with something written on the back. Ask for her good time. Ask for Melina. And he asks for the pen. Writes Melina down. It looks exactly the same.
Now she says, "You know, you popped back on the grid." And I think that's because his phone device.
Yeah, that's what
had reactivated. But I mean, it's so convenient, and I'm like, I kind of like the build. Like, yeah. I wanted that. You don't get any introduction to her character.
You don't get any introduction to her character, and
you have a tough time connecting to her because of it.
Well, but they wanted to set up that next chase sequence, right? Like
that's
and that's the big flaw with the remake. So again, still like it, but it's the big flaw is there.
It suffers a bit of Michael Bayism.
They're setting up each action sequence, and that's all they're doing in those quiet moments is really quickly setting up the next action sequence.
Well, and that's the whole thing. Like when you're talking about him seeking her out, what's great about Total Recall is it's very clear on its perspective. You are experiencing this as Quaid is experiencing it. You're figuring it out with him. This is how this is happening. You're more of an observer in the remake.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
You're not
there.
Part of his journey.
Yeah.
There's only one time in the remake where you kind of feel that way when he first goes back to his apartment there.
Oh, true.
And he's sort of going through all his stuff and all these and everything's all sealed. And then he's looking in the mirror and realizes that there's a thumbprint. And then that's how he finds the secret safe, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that moment in the bar that comes back too when he's talking to Harry and he's like, "Oh, I've always wanted to play piano."
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he gets to his apartment and actually can.
Yeah.
Very lovely, by the way.
The Hauser
Moonlight
apartment.
Sonata.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there was some nice foreshadowing happening there, which was really nice. But
yeah, and I did like how they gave Harry a little bit more to do. Like, he's not just a work companion, he's a friend.
Yeah.
You don't get quite that sense in the Schwarzenegger movie.
And to have somebody talk him down, it makes the most sense for Harry to be the one who comes in, not the guy from Recall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably one of the sequences in the original film I dislike the most because it doesn't make a lot of sense is they instantly attack Arnold. You shouldn't have gone to Recall when he's not convinced of anything. He's just dumped in a cab and sent home and refunded. He doesn't even remember being there.
Yeah.
So he could have just been talked right back into his life.
Oh, true.
Really easily. Yeah. So again, that kind of plays to the, well, maybe he's actually having his.
Well, and there's one thing moment. I talked about, like the recall moment, and it was when Sharon Stone comes in, and I'm like, man, you know what? They could have made it better, like just for her, if it was really happening, to be the wife where it's like going, yeah, no, I am here and I love you. I didn't try to kill you, but because I know you've gone to recall, once we get out of here, probably going to try and kill you. Because I am real pissed off right now. That too, oh, honey, I miss you bullshit. No, if you're a wife and your husband's getting his brain scrambled and you told him not to, you're going to be a bit mad.
I like that she turns out the lights and he doesn't think that's her.
Love that.
Initially.
Yeah.
I don't mind how Len Wiseman handles it either, where she gives him a big hug and then it just turns into a chokehold.
Yeah.
Ooh, and as we were talking about in another podcast, where she's wearing the tights, the leotards with the shoulder straps that go over, and the bit in the middle, which doesn't support anything, that's not what you work out in.
Coming back from last week.
Exactly. When you do have
if
boobs.
You're Sharon Stone, apparently.
When you have boobs, that will not do anything for you.
Yeah, that was a very late 80s, early 90s
conceit.
Or yeah, for sure. Is dress women up in these outfits that are hugely impractical for anything.
For the activity they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thankfully, we now live in a world where you can look great and still be comfortable. Yay, yoga pants.
Yeah. Well, you can look great and have stuff where it's supposed to be kept while you're actually running.
For God's sakes, woman, put on a sports bra.
You will hurt yourself and others.
I'm okay with that. That original movie made me fall in love with Sharon Stone, but sadly only lasted one movie.
Yeah.
You take what you can get.
No, I enjoyed her in Basic Instinct, even though she was terrible.
Yeah. Me and Beckinsale is still good.
Oh, yeah, Beckinsale.
Yeah, sadly, Len.
Stealing on that marriage.
Yeah, God damn it. Well, if that's not a marriage of any kind of convenience, I don't know what is. Like, true, right? She's gotten some big roles because of that marriage.
Oh, wait, no, so has he. He's gotten some big roles.
Yeah,
movies.
You know what? Makes me wonder if it's not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Beckinsale is talented. We've seen her in stuff other than his films, and she's always solid, right?
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did you feel like Jessica Biel was basically reprising her character from Blade 3?
No.
No.
She dressed really the same.
See, I thought she was doing her character from A-Team.
Yeah.
A little bit of that, too. Kind of a combination of both, maybe.
Yeah.
Because,
Stealth. Maybe Stealth.
That one, too.
But I'll just pick the one nobody saw.
Yeah. But she was wearing the same, like cargo pant kind of outfit. Like, even the same color, even, I think. All the way through this movie that she was in Blade 3.
Yeah, but she wasn't wearing the black tank top or have the things for shooting arrows.
That's true, but
she had more personality in Blade 3.
Mm.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She had more of a rounded backstory.
And I think she's great. She just didn't get a really good characterization in this
movie. That's the thing. Nobody it's like did. You said, Nobody she's got did. No introduction.
Yeah.
And by the time she gets there, it's sort of... We only find out, like, kind of later. She's, like, the guy's daughter. So she doesn't really have an identity really beyond herself.
No, I don't
believe. Just connected to other people. Yeah. She's not her own character.
Yeah, and I don't believe in their whatever the relationship they had before. Like, I just don't believe in her character.
No. Well, she doesn't exist beyond these people. Beyond these two men, she doesn't exist.
And that certainly, again, plays to the recall moment. And that's a great thing about this movie. If you remake it, you could just say it was a fucking dream.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If stuff doesn't make sense, it's a dream.
But, I mean, it also speaks back to what Trish was saying, is there's not enough quiet moments in here for these characters to develop, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's even hard to sort of buy...
There's more chemistry with his wife that's trying to kill him than the former love that he's been dreaming about.
That's right. And there's no like, even you don't even really buy Quaid's growth throughout the movie in this one, because he spends so much time just running, trying to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Where in the original, you've got, you know, he's working to find Melina, and then they have their very awkward moments. He doesn't remember their past. She's pissed off that Hauser disappeared. Doesn't realize, you know, there's all these awkward moments before they're basically kind of having to reconnect in brand new ways, because essentially he's a different person.
Well, and it's exactly what you're saying.
Past.
That interaction is two different things. In the remake, he's like, oh, there's something they couldn't erase, whatever. And in the sorry, I just thought that was stupid. And in the original, she's kissing him, and he outright says, look, I don't remember you. And that moment, and like, that's just so, I was like, oh, poor Melina, that's gotta suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing too is, Schwarzenegger's Quaid, he is quite reluctant to move forward with this whole thing initially, right? Like, when he finds out what it is, he's like, he just wants it all over. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to do this.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas Farrell's Quaid is like just deep in it.
Schwarzenegger's goes to recall because of his dreams,
mm-hmm.
and he's motivated by that. Whereas
Colin Farrell's
version, he's kind of trapped in a mundane life and needs something.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's like the connection isn't established, really.
No, yeah. And I mean, he has the dreams, but it's a little less defined. It certainly not drives him to recall.
He's not looking for this woman. No, he's not trying to answer
actually,
any questions.
Yeah, he's basically driven. He sees the ad on the side of the train, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. and then he, you know, goes through a couple of, somebody tries to talk him out of it. Another guy talks him into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's driven mainly because he needs an escape from a mundane life of his, you know, working on a line, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creating these synth bots, and just, he needs to find more out there. He's reading Ian Fleming on The Fall,
which is awesome.
Which is a great inspiration for bringing in the secret agent stuff. So...
Yeah, it's not. It's dissatisfaction. He's not trying to answer any questions.
And he doesn't get to spend any time with his wife.
It just seems so empty.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't get to spend any time with his wife because
she's an EMT.
She's an EMT. So when they're starting to have intimate moments, she gets called out, right? Or when she gets home, she's already asleep. So that's what's happened.
His life is empty.
His life is empty. Mm-hmm. She's asleep. He doesn't want to wake her. So he goes out for a drink with a friend. And, right? And then that's sort of how it all leads in together. So it makes a certain amount of sense, but it doesn't have the same.
You don't feel you're part of a bigger thing
until
you get to the end. And even then, I don't feel you're part of a bigger thing.
For what feels like a pretty big world, like it's so detailed and compact.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, he feels so empty. You know, there's something about that. I like the juxtaposition of that.
Well, I think that part of that speaks to the whole, it's supposed to sort of go back to the whole thing with Cohagen. And the wealthy privileged living in Britain versus the people living in the colony, where they're only allowed to go to the I can't remember they call it, but the
UFB.
Britain, UFB, yeah. Yeah, to work.
Yeah, he's right. Essentially lives in the colony and works in the UFB.
Yeah, and why? Why does he work in the UFB? If they don't have any space, why are these factories not in the colony?
Mm-hmm.
Because the money has to go to the rich people, not to the poor people.
And of course it also goes to Cohagen.
But Cohagen wants to thin out the population anyway in these habitable zones on the planet, specifically the colony, and he's going to replace the workers with synth anyway. So at this point, why is anybody doing anything? Honestly, Cohagen could have done a lot of that without like this intricate plan. Like he could have done all of that without Quaid at all.
Yeah.
Well, let's place it like in what we know today, like with automation and pollution. Maybe the whole thing is he was automating stuff and polluting stuff, and all of his rich buddies are like, oh my God, there isn't enough awesome space for us. We need to make more because they were busy fucking everything up.
Well, that's essentially how the news kind of portrays it.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so, is the rich are wrecking their own space, and now they want somebody else's.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean the whole thing, their thing about the lack of space. That's you can go, well, why do they have factories if they don't have the space for them when the colony already does? Mm. I mean they're already kind of farming everything out to them anyhow.
Yeah, the poor colony guys are being imported to create the army that's going to overthrow them.
Yeah,
like, I think partly that is because
that's so
if
sad.
You're going to make an army of synths that are going to be your army to fight for you. Are you going to build your weapons in the very place that you want to use them?
Yes.
The answer is pretty much no, sure, unless you don't want them hacked.
Well,
that's true.
That's true, but they don't.
That's the thing; they want control of that.
Yeah, but right up until the end, the colony doesn't even know they're going to be invaded. As far as they know, these are to fight these rebels.
Yeah.
Right. So if they get them in a nice, secure, get them built there, their troops are already in the colony they want to invade. That's pretty fucking genius.
Yeah. No, but if you get them built there, then the colony might already suspect something's up.
And
because where else are they going to use?
Quaid's a double, is a double spy. As much like the original film, he's there to out the resistance, but he needs the resistance for the motivation for creating all these synths in the first place.
Yes,
exactly.
So why would you wipe them out? That's actually it's a perfect motivation.
I
guess you wipe them out right at the moment you're ready to invade, but
yeah, there's definitely an irony there. And I mean and they make it very clear that this master kill code doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
It was all part of the setup.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Hauser character seems to have been really reprehensible in both movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we're getting really into the remake, so I think it's high time I run that trailer, and we'll talk some more and wrap this sucker up.
Are you actually happy with how your life's turned out?
I know this isn't what we had in mind when we were younger, but who gets everything they fantasize about, right?
Hey, what do you know about recall?
Stay away from them. Mess with your mind, man.
You seem like you're looking for something. Is it this? You're gonna wish you had three hands.
I'm looking for recall.
Remember to have a good time.
Tell us your fantasy. We'll give you the memory.
What is it? What's wrong?
It's all a mistake. Nobody.
Oh my God. I went to recall after work.
What?
And I killed them.
Whatever happened, we're gonna get through it.
It's okay.
All right, I can't break it. Come on. Crazy! What are you doing?
My job.
Our marriage.
What can I say? I give good wife.
This is gonna be hard for you to believe. Whatever you think, you remember. It's not real. This person you think you are now, it's all a lie. Not me. And who the hell am I?
Get in. But let's just see you everywhere.
This is my wife.
You're married?
I think it's safe to say we're separated.
Here, you join.
Doug! Not really him. He's still back at recall, strapped to a chair.
He's lying.
Shoot her.
This is not a delusion.
Kill her, damn it. Shoot her. Get activated. I want him alive. Tell me what's going on.
Just trying to recover what's in your head.
You're gonna need your seatbelt on.
Hold on.
All right, Total Recall 2012, directed by Len Wiseman from the Underworld franchise, starring his wife from the Underworld franchise, Kate Beckinsale as Laurie, Colin Farrell as Quaid, Bokeem Woodbine as Harry, Bryan Cranston as Cohagen, Jessica Biel as Melina, Bill Nighy as Matthias, John Cho as McClane, and Will Yoon Lee as Merrick. Screenplay by Kurt Wimmer, who did the screenplays for Equilibrium and Salt. So, okay. I honestly don't remember much about Salt, but I really like Equilibrium.
Equilibrium is amazing.
And
yeah, I didn't enjoy it.
It was. Mark Baumbach, who, okay, he's some good, some bad. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, awesome.
Yeah.
The Wolverine, meh. Live Free or Die Hard, I may never forgive him. Budgeted $125 million, and as I said, $184 million. So, you know, people didn't want this one as much.
No, like, that's the thing. It just wasn't desired.
Yeah.
But they went ahead and did it.
No, and it's funny. You notice Colin Farrell tends to do these movies, because he did the Miami Vice movie too, which also I think didn't do very well.
Nope.
You just stay away from the shit.
Stay away from remakes, Colin, because you're great in non-remake movies.
And he'll bitch about movies that he didn't enjoy shooting in the first place. I mean, I still, to this day, I don't think he has a good thing to say about Daredevil.
No. Well, it's not a good movie.
Yeah.
He's great. Watch The Lobster. He is brilliant in that.
People love Colin Farrell, but he's in some bad movies.
But he's in some brilliant ones as well.
This one isn't one of them. So this one's actually decent. And Len Wiseman, I think, is, like, you look at the Underworld franchise and it's kind of one-on, one-off for me. Like, that one was awesome. That one was shit. Oh, that was awesome. That one was shit.
Well, what I kind of admire about him is he goes hard or goes home. He doesn't hold back. So even if it's a bad Underworld movie, he's still going for it. And I'm like, you know what? I can kind of appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, I mean, he's evidenced in like everything that he does that he's really great at doing an action scene.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He just needs to cut back. But he just needs to cut back on that. I think he should work on getting better at story. Yeah, because then he would have great movies.
The story in this movie is definitely lacking. It takes a backseat to those action sequences for sure.
And that's sort of what, yeah, that kind of is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Now, there was a sequence in here in the remake, and we'll talk about the original version as well, when they are talking Quaid down.
Yeah.
In the original movie, it's the guy from Recall, which, as you said, doesn't as make as much sense as it being a friend of his, like Harry. And
yeah,
Harry,
well, he kills the Harry character early in the first one.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Which is why that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Although then you'd be instantly in a dream if he showed up again.
Yes.
Which is that's what made me think it was kind of a Recall moment in the original movie, because he kills one of his buddies. He kills his buddies and a bunch of these guys just in the middle of the street.
Yeah,
right?
Well, Quaid's kind of, when he gets into spy mode, he's kind of cold about it all.
Yeah,
you know?
He's deadly.
Yeah, he shoots his wife and Laurie, and he says, consider this a divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, with the typical Schwarzenegger one-liners.
Yeah. Which I gotta, I'll give Len Wiseman a little credit, too. They're getting chased by Laurie, and Malene's, that's your wife? He's like, I think it's safe to say we're separated.
Yeah. You sure know how to pick him. He didn't pick her.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
But there's something I really liked about this sequence. I mean, one, because it was a friend trying to talk him down, and it made sense.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have his friend attack him early in the film. They had him convincing him of his reality. And he's consistent in his role in that.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's a more likely person to talk
to. And outside of the scene, there's Kate Beckinsale, who's been trying to kill him for the last hour.
Yeah.
And crying
in like a sweater.
It's beautiful. And when he finally makes that moment, and instead of the sweat from the guy in the original film, it's the tear on Melina's face, because there's doubt in both their eyes at this point. Like now, because Harry says, well, to pop out of this, you have to kill the dream.
Kill her.
You have to kill the thing that's driving the dream, and that's Melina. And of course, she pulls a gun on Quaid, so it's really a cool, tense moment.
But the point is, she doesn't want to kill him because he's told to kill her. She's like, I can't let them have what's in your head. That's not what this is about.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so he finally makes that choice and shoots Harry. And I love how that instant change from Kate Beckinsale outside was so great. That just that weeping mode, off comes a sweater, and into intense kill mode again.
Yeah.
Making commands.
Grab a gun.
And it just, you know, shows her adeptness and just being able to change on a dime.
Yeah, and literally, like, it was instantaneous.
Yeah, and she just goes from, you know, this worried affection to just kill mode. It was great.
She's like, all right, he's got us. We're in.
Yeah.
She's a spy and a soldier.
Yeah. I love how she kept that whole aspect of
As
Richter.
As she said, she gives good wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she kept that whole aspect of Richter where she's told to take him alive, but she's like, kill him on sight.
Yeah. Right. I've spent 6 weeks with this asshole. I don't want to spend a moment more.
Yeah.
And she just sees threat. Threat.
Yeah. But and she knows who he is now, too.
Yeah.
She knows that he is Hauser, right? Because,
this legendary spy for Koenig.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the whole thing with, like, Laurie. In the original, it's two separate characters. It's Laurie and Richter. And Richter's kind of pissed because, like, that's Laurie's his squeeze, right?
Yeah.
So, but in this one, Laurie is the one who has to be married to him. So she's like, of course I don't want to fucking stay married.
Yeah, Richter, at least, I mean, it makes sense because they're with Richter, that's just sheer jealousy driving all of his motivations. And it's simple to understand. It's far more complex with Laurie.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is an assignment, but she's not really into doing this.
She
doesn't even really know why. She doesn't know what's Hauser.
No, she doesn't care about this guy at all. She's like, do you really think a guy like you could get somebody like me?
And she feels wasted in this assignment. That's the other bit. This is a fucking insult to her. That's why she's kind of pissed.
Because she doesn't know who it is.
Although I like how she gets chided the same way Richter does,
yep,
by Cohagen, who incidentally takes about an hour and a half before he finally shows up on screen, except for that quickie video on the car window.
I like that. That was great. To him being so above and powerful. He's not going to lower himself down into the dirt. Why would he do that?
Yeah, it's true.
And it also plays more into that whole recall thing. Is your bad guy? Is it going to show up all the time
until the climax of the film?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what those recalls are kind of like. They're like a vacation or like a film that you actually live.
Yeah, and you build towards your climax. Yeah.
So it did make more sense that way.
Right? Yeah.
And see, that's the other thing too, is everything about the remake was all told from Quaid's perspective, right? There's no scene where he's not present in some way. Whereas in the Schwarzenegger one, you do get scenes where he's not present.
Yeah, but we still do lack... Like, I still feel it's not quite his perspective because we're not getting the sense of discovery we got in the original.
No, I agree. They said the storytelling part was missing. But
everything's kind of handed to him as he goes.
But it is. Yeah. He's the only one present. Like, other people could not exist if he was there. Oh, and also with Cohagen, the big fight scene at the end... Cohagen just runs crap. Why would he be such a good fighter?
Yeah,
unless it was a recall moment.
Yeah, I thought Cohagen had some fighting chops there.
Well, because Cohagen was a general in the wars. They say that in the movie.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. They did
say
that.
He was a combatant.
How long ago were the wars?
They weren't that
long
ago.
And Hauser is one of the top spy agents. Just because he's a general doesn't mean he's a better fighter than Hauser.
No. Well, and he obviously wasn't because Hauser killed him.
Yeah, but well, I mean, he gets a lot in.
You figured they would have spent time because they were friends. In both movies, they say they were friends.
Ooh, maybe they sparred.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, sorry. Yeah. So I was trying to work my way around.
Yeah, you'd think Cohagen might actually know the moves.
Yeah, because Cohagen was his commanding officer in the wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it still feels a little bit like a Total Recall moment.
Yeah, oh, for sure, right?
Sure.
Because it's all too convenient, too.
Well, everything should be doubt. Yeah. That's the beauty of it. Let's go a little earlier. The chair moment. I mean, that's when he actually goes to recall. I think that's also a very important moment in the film. I mean, we could talk about this movie for probably hours because I think we all love it. But the original film, you know, with the secretary and the changing nails.
I love that.
That's actually something I remember. I read the Piers Anthony movie novel.
Oh, okay.
So it's based on the screenplay that Piers Anthony might have had at the time. So there's sequences that aren't in the movie. I wish I could remember all the stuff that didn't make it into the film, especially there's a lot of stuff with the alien artifacts and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember the secretary in the book, instead of the changing nails, had what they called a peekaboo address. If you were just looking, you know, through your peripheral vision, her clothes went away.
Weird.
I know. I'm like, well, I can see why they didn't do that in the movie, but damn.
That would be strange.
That's not the first time he's used that device in his stories, by the way.
I'm trying to remember. Well, like, I haven't read a lot of his sci-fi.
I'm sorry, but why would you wear that?
So. I don't know, but she obviously was proud of her figure.
Because Piers Anthony's a big proponent of changing the perception of body shaming, right?
Ooh, okay.
Right? Where you should not be ashamed of your body. You should be able to wear whatever you want with whatever makes you comfortable without society telling you that it's unacceptable.
Oh, so like if you could be like a nudist, you can wear the peekaboo dress knowing you're slightly still a nudist.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right?
Ah, I like that idea.
Right. And Anthony and Heinlein.
So no matter
both
what you look like it's not about being hot and having people look at you. It's just about, like, I just want to be naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Granted, the secretary in the Schwarzenegger movie, I would have been totally fine if that had been the case.
She's just a cutie pie. I loved her.
Just adorable. I thought she was cute as a button as well. So. Yeah.
And the juxtaposition of all this sweetness at the end where she's part of the people who have to dump him in a cab. So she's seen some crap. I'm like, oh, muffin.
Yeah, she had a bad day too.
Yeah.
And then I like the dirtiness and grunginess of the recall in the remake as well with John Cho. For a short scene, really owns that scene.
He's amazing.
Really, he owns everything he's in. He's got to be one of my favorite actors working today right now.
For sure.
So much, he has so much fun doing everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every time I see him, I'm like, woo!
I like he's becoming one of those sci-fi guys.
A Cho moment, or a Chomo.
But yeah, you know, his how he sells it compared to the other guy. The guy in the original is kind of like a used car salesman.
Yeah.
He's all schmarm and charm.
But I think that plays into it about it, the whole thing, because they know they're probably doing sketchy, skeevy shit.
Yeah. Whereas, John Cho, it's kind of like, even though they're advertising, he's talking to him like a bro, you know?
He's slick. Like, I imagined him, like, this is that universe's equivalent of a pharmaceutical salesman. That's what I thought of.
Right.
When I saw him.
Yeah, he tells you what's available, makes you decide you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You're right. That's how he handled it. So, the difference in what was essentially the same sequences are quite fascinating between those two scenes.
Exactly. Like, how they manipulate people are two different ways of doing it.
Yeah.
But they were both equally effective.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think part of it, too, is the used car salesman trope was a big thing in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, we see it in other movies, too, right? Whereas even used car salesmen nowadays don't sell that way.
Right.
No.
Right? So they did have to kind of update it to be more like that soft sell that is used as a sales approach nowadays, where, like I said, they tell you what's available, get you excited about what's available, and that you decide what it is you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas in the 80s and 90s, it was the hard sell.
Yeah, and sort of point you in the direction they know you want to go and what they want to give you.
Because,
people don't respond to that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we pay money for, like, services where we don't have to watch ads. That is our idea. Like, ad blocker. We have all sorts of stuff. We do not want to see ads. We don't want to be sold to, but we are.
Yeah. Yeah. That might have been what drove me to Netflix, and it worked.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the whole thing. That's a selling point now, is to not have to look at ads.
Yeah. And people tell me, you saw that ad for that. I'm like, no, I didn't. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. I haven't turned my cable box on. Oh, wait, I don't have one.
The Super Bowl commercials are the only commercials I know of people actively looking out to watch.
Yeah, when the Super Bowl happened, and, sorry for our American fans, I am Canadian, so...
We don't get to see them when you get to see them.
Yeah, we don't get to see the commercials, and honestly, I don't care about NFL, and if I was a big football watcher, it would be CFL. Support my country, my teams. But,
well, it's a more exciting game.
Yeah, so no disrespect for, Americans. But when people were asking me, you're watching the Super Bowl, and they'd say, you're not looking forward to the commercials? And I'm like, I spend most of my life actively avoiding ads. Why would I go out of my way to watch them?
Yeah. The Super Bowl ones are the only ones I do that for.
I know people who are definitely not sports fans. Like, I like football, but I can take it or leave it. And there's people I know who just hate football, but will watch the Super Bowl for commercials.
Yeah. Or it for the halftime show.
It's always baffled me.
Or for the halftime show. Those are the two things. That's the thing about the Super Bowl is, like, people go to Super Bowl parties and there's guys who just want to watch the game and other people don't.
I remember the last time I actually watched the Super Bowl.
Okay.
It was with you. It was the Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson fiasco.
Oh, right. Oh, we were at a bar.
We were at a bar. That was the last Super Bowl that I actually watched.
We all looked at each other. Did we just see your tit?
You saw most of her breast. You did not see her nipple.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's...
You
that's,
saw nothing untoward. Yeah. That was the whole thing.
No, I liked it. It was fine.
It's just a boob. It's not to kill people.
And she's very attractive lady.
Yeah.
But going back
boobs
to the ad thing,
people.
Since we're talking about ads, the ads for Recall.
Yes.
Another great attention to detail that I think Paul Verhoeven's just masterful at. He does it in RoboCop and
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, and he does it here as well.
Starship Troopers, it's used as partly a narrative device.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It is in all of them.
Yeah, it is absolutely in all of them. So, you've got the ads happening on the trains, and Len Wiseman uses it briefly. It's not quite as... He blows through stuff so quickly so he could get to his action sequences in that movie. But at least he has that big one on the side of the train, which I really liked. I like the idea of the whole side of the train being a billboard, essentially.
Yeah. Why not?
And I mean, the first probably 25 minutes of that film is... I love the pacing the first 25 minutes of that of the remake.
Mm-hmm.
It's
really
nice. And then this is where it tends to go a little bit off the rails, is it becomes like that, just one continuous action sequence.
Action after action.
It never slows down, especially when you get in the second act where it should,
yeah,
before building again. It's just, it crescendos and then it stays there.
See,
so by the time you get to the climax, I mean, you've been on a high for so long that you're kind of getting bored with all the action.
See, I think what you could do, like, if you wanted to watch it this way, is go to the point where he escapes from his wife, and then go to the part where his friend's trying to talk him down, and then get to the part where on the train, then watch the big, huge action sequence at the end, and you'd probably be fine.
You wouldn't miss anything. No. You would miss nothing.
And you would not be actioned out.
Yeah, no, there's plenty of those chase sequences, like with the six-way elevators and stuff. You could totally cut those out, and it wouldn't change the film at all.
Nope.
Nope.
And that's the shame. Like, yeah. They don't drive the narrative.
Yeah, and whereas in the original, almost every single action sequence drives a narrative somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It gets into another important point.
Yeah.
I guess probably the big thing most people probably miss was Quato.
Yes.
From the original. And I mean, it was something they were not going to be able to do.
Well, they got rid of mutants, really.
Yeah. Yeah, the mutant angle was gone.
Which is funny because they could have done it.
But it's even more fantastical.
Yeah, with the toxicity of Earth.
Like, there's the psychics and the mutants and... Like, it's so fantastic. I mean, with the more grounded take that they were trying to do in this futuristic Earth, I get it. I get why they didn't have that. I mean, they still could have had probably a mutant twin. I mean, they could have just named a character Quato. That's an informed character.
Yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, it could have been an alias, right?
Yeah.
Right? It could have been, like, the code name for...
Actually...
Oh, it could have been what they call the kill code, Quato.
Well, I was kind of...
You could just have a nod.
Well, I thought it was interesting that like Bill Nighy was called Matthias.
Yeah.
That, I'm like, why didn't you call him Quato?
Yeah. I know. Because like, it
made the most sense to me.
Yeah. I think.
I certainly didn't want him to be called George.
Well, no. Yeah. And I mean, you can have it. Like, Quatu's just a code name he's given himself.
Yeah.
Like, why? Here's the other thing. If you're the leader of the resistance, would you keep your original name?
Or at least turn it into an anagram for his resistance.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would mean.
But, like, if you're hiding from the world, cool. Would you keep your own name? I don't think you would.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one thing I really did like is the fact that he's living off that grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That they're living in the...
Irradiated zone
or whatever it is.
Yeah. They actually called it something...
the nowhere zone or something?
I thought they called it the no zone.
The no zone, yeah.
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 Which means you're not supposed to go there, I guess.
Yeah. It's because it's no ozone?
I don't know. Maybe that would have been great if they told us or threw it in a news broadcast or something.
Yeah, somewhere along the lines. Because I mean,
just
it can't be. It's not that far away. So why is like there's this like line that's the no zone, right?
Yeah,
it's like okay, you go this far and you're in the no zone, right? You're like there's no transition from like this. Destroyed land that as it moves
they take the subway subway. I love that.
That's their version of doing the underground of Mars.
I thought that was fun.
I was cool with that.
Me
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
That repurposing the subway as a way to get out.
Yeah, because it looked more like old used, which would have been modern time stuff.
Yeah.
So it would have been 90s 2000 subway system. Like, okay,
it was completely jury-rigged too. It was like it was
great.
Yeah, they were like banging on stuff to get it to work, and it was fine.
Yeah, they had to like roll things and do it to get ready to go.
Of course, if it is irradiated zone, I'd be a little worried about
there. Well, I don't think it was irradiated because they were wearing gas masks, so I think there was something else.
The air is toxic.
It was the air that was toxic, right?
Because at one point Colin Farrell is going outside and all he has is the gas mask on and he doesn't suffer any undue damage.
Well, undue damage that Arnold Schwarzenegger should have suffered and didn't. So,
yeah.
That might be a hole, but that's where I just interpret it with you couldn't breathe.
Yeah, it's something that had to do with the air rather than anything else.
Right.
But that also doesn't make sense in the long grand scheme of things. Then why would this United Federation of Britain or whatever it is and the colonies still exist if everything that's killing the world is airborne?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought they were under a dome as well. I thought that was a whole dome thing.
That I don't know. I thought they were doing the dome thing on Mars. Oh no, the dome thing on Mars for sure. Just not on the.
Oh yeah, I don't think they established it, but that's
not
sort
on
of,
the remake.
See, this is me trying to fill in some of the narrative because I couldn't get my head around it. Because I was like, I just assumed that was what you would do if and it's all toxic. Right?
They don't. Yeah, they don't really explain that, and I think that should have happened earlier in the film. I mean, You could have easily put that in the news broadcast. He's watching at breakfast time, and then you would have had something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Rebels could have, if there was a dome, the Rebels could have
created
some damage to a dome or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Where some toxic air got in and affected a park area or a suburb. Yeah, a suburb or something like that, right? It could have given a little more understanding as to why the no zone was the no zone.
Yeah.
Because, right? I mean, it was stretching the belief a little bit of, that there were only two habitable places left on the planet.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it sounds like we're shitting on the Len Wiseman movie, and I guess we kind of are, but...
With a few tweaks, it could be a great film. Yeah.
If anything, it needed another 15 minutes, you know.
Action.
Yeah.
And 15 minutes less of action.
Yeah, and it would have been... You didn't have to change the length of the movie at all. You just needed to shave down the action sequences a little bit, which would have saved you millions of dollars.
And replaced it with story.
Yeah, it would have just... it would have kept people's attention a little longer. I mean, when you're getting bored of those incredibly choreographed action sequences, and they're just so close together.
Yeah.
That says a lot where you needed to just slow the movie down a bit.
You need a breather.
Yeah.
And it's also got to move it forward. Like,
I mean, you do get a couple. I mean, you do get the in the bank, you know, where he's getting talked down, and you need those moments. But there should have been a few more where we could have got to know the other characters. Yeah, we just don't.
You could have had him, like, that initial action sequence where he escapes from his wife and all of them, have that lead up to part where he finds Melina, and then you get to the bank, and then you go into that other part of those other action scenes where they're escaping.
Yeah, Doug and Harry's relationship was more believable than the one he had with Melina.
Yes. Yeah, and that's saying something. But that's also part of the twisted narrative. That's why it could just be a whole thing in Recall.
Yeah. I guess Benny... things that I think maybe people might have been missing.
Yeah,
Benny was kind of cool. The cab driver on Mars.
We couldn't remember how many kids he had.
Even the Johnny cab you kind of miss. Although modern days, we almost have it now. We already have self-driving cars, and in 2017, so something like Johnny cab seems a bit redundant.
We would find the robot probably unnerving.
Yeah,
he was a little... he's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a body, really.
He kind of has feelings.
Yeah.
And he burns alive. He's a little homicidal with his feelings when they get hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the cars in the remake, because I loved the one little bit where she's driving and then she says, okay, you drive. And then she just, like, literally pushes the steering wheel over at him and it switches sides. I thought that was great.
Cool. That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's lots of great ideas of what the future might look like in trying to create a unique look for the film, for sure.
Yeah, and the synths. I like the look of them.
Those were cool. Felt kind of RoboCop-y, but I think that was...
See, they felt Attack of the Clones to me.
You're absolutely right. I think the color scheme of black and white... I mean, the cop cars in Calgary are black and white, so that kind of makes a little sense to me. But I think it's very much a Stormtrooper nod.
Yeah.
Well, that, and I mean, I felt a certain amount of iRobot look in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, true.
Right. Yeah. But when you think of Cohagen as the Chancellor, I mean, it's totally...
Chancellor.
Yeah. It's totally the Emperor and his soldiers.
Mm.
It absolutely is.
Bryan Cranston is Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah. he totally was. In fact, I think there's some nod with the numbers. If you correlate the numbers with letters, it actually spells Jedi.
Wow.
I read something about that. I couldn't be bothered to write it down and see what that actually was, but that takes a much keener eye than mine to spot.
That's a lot of keen eyes, but also I worry that somebody doesn't have enough to do with their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
That special effects guy's hiding shit.
I love it, but get out more.
Yeah, I mean, there's whole blogs devoted to fan theories, so...
But this one is... I think this one's so open to, like, the interpretation. This is what... Both movies all have those moments where you're, oh, God, is it real? Is it not real? What's happening? Like, I love it.
So any sequences you guys want to talk about that we haven't really covered? I mean, God knows there's plenty.
I think we've covered the key ones. Well, there's one scene.
I mean, the ending's so different.
Yeah. The ending's so different. I actually wanted to talk about the ending in the remake, because the remake is the one that I tend to have.
Essentially the nuclear reactor.
Yeah. But
but with the fall.
Yeah. Well, no. In the original, you've got these rods going into this.
Oh no, you do.
Thing. Yeah. It's essentially an upside down nuclear reactor.
But the difference in that, in the nuclear reactor in the original is about creating something, but at the end of the remake, they're destroying something.
And the freaking false ending at the end of the remake. I'm sorry. You know what? You knew it was coming, right? It was.
Got to create that last moment of doubt where he sees the recall billboard.
Yeah, and with Lori, right? Mm-hmm. Where she's pretending to be Melina. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, yes, where, like, she's wearing the hologram.
Yeah, it's like, okay, enough's enough already. Let it.
After we thought she got blown up in the fall.
Yeah. Yes, I thought she should have. That's when she should have died.
Yeah, it was.
You didn't need that last.
Too many false finishes.
Yeah. Too many jump. Like, it's the jump scare, but you don't need a jump scare. It's not that type of movie.
It's not. And it's just. And I was tired. by the time we reached this movie. Like, I was actually exhausted. I'm like, oh my fucking God, is this movie ever going to end? And I'm not normally like that with a movie. Like, if it's a good movie and it's 2 hours, 2.5 hours long, you don't notice, right?
Yeah.
But I did notice. So I'm not saying this is a bad movie, but I'm saying that it needs a little more work.
Yeah.
It just needs some cuts. I think just some cuts and a little bit more fleshing out of the meeting of Melina and Hauser. You might have.
It's science fiction. It doesn't have to be action, action, action every second of the.
I like some science with my fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I also like the theme. Like, I want more of the theme. I want more of what makes you you.
Yeah. We should have had more of those doubtful Mr. X.
Yeah. Like, what makes you you? Is it the memories that make you you? Or can you change the memories to make you you? Or also, here's the other thing that I find really weird. Like, you know how sometimes you have memories, but you might not remember them the exact way they happen? Because your brain rewires stuff and rethinks stuff. So if you go to recall, are your memories going to become degraded over time? Because your brain isn't going to remember it perfectly every time.
Well, there's a couple of things John Cho says, and then in my brain, I just flashed back to the second Matrix movie where he's sitting and talking to that guy in the chair for half an hour.
Oh, I hate that part.
I like it, but you got to really follow it.
I think that's why I got frustrated trying to figure it out.
But, they had a similar sequence, and they're like, oh, they're just going to try to shove as much information at us in about a minute and a half. It doesn't work.
No. But if you spread that out as, like, over the movie, it's stronger. But yeah, I always thought about that. Like, that's part of what recall kind of, it confused me, because you remember stuff and then memories go away. Like, is there a warranty at recall? Like, how long you can hold on to these wonderful memories before they start to go away because your brain can't handle it?
Yeah.
Is there a dementia insurance policy? What happens?
Oh, what happens if you go through this little add-on of Secret Agent and then you go back to your normal life and you're completely paranoid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some mental health issues that should be addressed. Maybe that's why I like the John Cho thing a little bit, even though it wasn't illegal, I guess. Yeah. It's kind of shady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and he even says, and you can't have done or been any of these things in real life, right?
Otherwise it gets confused.
The mental, they do talk about that there's conflict with your memories if you've actually been through some of this stuff.
Yeah, which answers kind of, like, from the first movie, that's sort of a question.
Yeah, and like they're injecting the sedative before, so they can put in the memories, and that's where you think maybe, because it's almost instantaneous, oh, you lied. Yeah. You have these memories already, so they had to pull them out, or like instantly. They weren't so quick to do that in the original.
Well, it's weird. In the original,
they let him drift off.
There's one cut where he's kind of drifting, and then it doesn't focus on his face. It focuses on the chair, and then it comes to the point where the guy's in the office talking to the other woman, and they're trying to yell through the little comm, "Come to the lab."
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's like, he goes, "You're having a reaction to the implant." He's like, "We haven't done the implant yet, right?"
Yeah.
So, I love how he's being a dick, and finally she puts him in his place. She's like, I fucking told you.
Another schizoid embolism. That's what really bothered.
Yeah, that's like, a made-up term.
We're having another schizoid embolism. Like, wait a minute. How many of these have you had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, not a thing.
Shouldn't that be in the brochure? Like, the small print somewhere may have schizoid embolism.
Yeah, and an embolism should kill you.
Yeah, they did change the term in the remake. I can't remember what they called it.
But like schizoid makes sense. A schizoid event, yes, but an embolism should kill you.
Yeah, yeah. They changed it to something that is actually a little more legitimate in the remake.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, here's my question, though. If this were a real thing and you could do a Total Recall type of thing where you could have a memory of something that you never did, would you do it?
No. I didn't even think about it. No.
I do have to think about it. I don't know.
Like, would it depend on the memory? Because here's the thing.
If it was something that is completely impossible to do in my real life, I might want to do that.
If I partied one night with Lady Gaga, that would be a memory I know wasn't real, but I could keep it.
I think you'd have to structure it differently than they do in the film. Like, it'd have to be more of like an interactive movie, I think, in my brain.
Yeah.
So it's like remembering a movie that you got. It's, I guess, being inside a video game in a way. You have to be able to make that separation.
Yeah.
Because you know it's not a legit memory. But then again, there's when I was younger where I'd have such detailed dreams that I thought it was real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we already do that.
I've been having a number of nightmares lately. So Total Recall, them waking up after a nightmare, I was like, oh, so this is why I'm watching this movie.
So it's entirely possible to already do that in our own brains, have a dream that we think is reality.
Yeah.
So
get mad at people because they did something in your dream, even though they didn't do it.
Done that too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's a really complex question.
No, not for me. Yeah. No.
I mean, there's lots of things I'd like to experience, but, you know.
Okay, I have an alternative question. If you could have it so, like, there might be a memory you have, but, like, it's foggy, but somebody could legitimately give you how it really happened, would you want that memory?
No. Like, to recover a lost memory?
To recover a lost memory, yes.
You know what? For me, if a memory is foggy, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, I suspect the brain works in such a way where you're protecting your own sanity by burying memories that are unpleasant.
Yeah, but sometimes if you need to get hold of it because you have to get through something, and getting through something you can't put your finger on is probably harder than anything else.
Yeah, I think for therapeutics reasons, then yeah, you know, like I think there's a place for it. Yeah.
True. Yeah, like you can't fight a fog monster, but if you know what the monster looks like, you can fight it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And certainly for the, maybe that's why I said no, is because I don't feel like I need any kind of therapy.
Yeah, and I don't really.
I'm sure
I don't,
others might think I do, but yeah. I don't think I do.
I don't like.
No, you're fine.
We're all fine. You know, as time goes on, I'll lose some small details, but I generally don't have foggy areas in my memory as far as my history goes. Mm. So, but I guess if I don't remember them, I guess I wouldn't know they were gone.
And that's exactly it. If I don't know it's missing, then I'm not missing it. So, and that's why my automatic response.
Generally, it's like, I'm trying to remember that name, and I can't remember that person's name.
Going through a whole procedure just to remember somebody's name.
No.
I'll look it up on the internet.
No. I'll go through that awkward embarrassment if I run into him in a mall or something. Yeah. Hey, you're that person I met that one time.
Or you could just do a Tyler. Who the fuck are you?
I've done that too.
Nice.
I'm just as abrasive as Tyler sometimes.
Yeah.
Although I'll wait till the end. I'll have an entire conversation with somebody. I totally know who they are. And then we'll start walking away. I'm like, who are you?
I've had conversations with people where I can remember what their mother's name is, what they did for a living. Like, they once went on vacation somewhere, but I cannot for the life of me remember their fucking name.
Yeah, names are hard.
I can remember such distinct details, but their name always disappears, and I don't know why.
Yeah, names are hard.
Yeah, I have issues with names too.
Yeah.
See, well, memories are so weird.
I think everybody sometimes has those brain farts on names, though. When you think about how many names and faces you have in your memory
at
any given time, I mean, it's makes sense that you would sometimes have trouble connecting one to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, faces I'm usually good on, although sometimes I see somebody's face a lot and I think I know them, but they just take the same bus as me.
Well, Trish raised a good question. If you could live a fantasy and have that memory, what would it be?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be? You can tell us that I guess you can't really tell us that much on Twitter, but if you want to do it in short sentences, you can do it and tell us on at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake, of course, on Facebook, and you can email us, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. We would like to know.
Yes.
And, of course, if you have any questions, comments, corrections about the episode, you can do that as well. And we do take fan challenges if we think it's cool. Could be in an upcoming episode, so don't feel like you can't make some suggestions, because we might take them to task, but we will make fun of you for it.
It depends on the movie. Sometimes you can say,
I don't think we've done a fan challenge yet where we haven't ridiculed somebody.
That is true.
We always take the challenger to task a little bit.
And his tongue firmly planted into cheek. So
we still love you.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a sign of love for us. If we're verbally abusing you, we love you.
Yeah, we're totally affectionate.
We love you, and we sometimes judge you, but not in the way you think we're judging you.
Paranoia.
Welcome to Total Recall.
Another way you could support the show is going to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a comment. Other people, when they're looking at shows to listen to, we'll see those ratings and comments and hopefully give the show a chance as well. So they're very important. Please do us that favor. Do us that solid. It's the only thing we've ever asked from our fellow invaders, is to just go there, leave a comment, leave a review, and it helps out potential new listeners.
Exactly. So. And tell your friends if you think they might like
Absolutely. Tell all your friends.
Tell them if you don't think they'll like us. Maybe they'll tell somebody who does.
There you go. That's right.
Spread it around.
Yeah. And another way you could help out the show is just tell those people how to find us. You know, okay, you have an iPhone, but they have an Android. Whatever. You know what? We're on lots of different platforms. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher, Google Play Music, Audio Boom, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, even freaking YouTube.
Freaking YouTube.
Every time you go through that, I keep thinking it might be shorter to tell people how not to find us. You know,
really? It probably is. We're not. The problem is, I don't know what platforms we're not on, because we're on that many.
Yeah, it's simple.
We're not on SoundCloud. Google. We have a couple episodes on SoundCloud. But
go stay at home alone in a cabin in the woods. That's how not to find us.
Yes. But yeah, search Google for Invasion of the Remake. We're like the first 10 search results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So we're there. We're easily accessible.
Yeah. After the first page, then it starts to turn into Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We'll cover it someday.
Exactly. That's going to get gotten to.
Someday. Episode 1,000. I don't know. Because there's 1,000 versions of the fucking thing.
Yeah. That's the one that we can't leave it too long. Otherwise, it'll be like 20 movies.
That one's going to be a retrospective episode, because there's way too many movies to watch in a week. We're going to have to really prep up for that one.
Spread it out between two episodes even.
Maybe. I don't know. That one's going to be a tough one. That's why I've been actively avoiding it.
I know. Well, we learned that lesson the hard way with I Am Legend.
Yeah, our very first episode.
You guys did four movies.
Well, you know,
we didn't think it through.
We had to learn the hard way. Like, okay, I think right after that I told Jeff, and I'm like, no more Asylum, they don't count.
Yep. And also, we can't do four. We just can't.
Four is nuts.
Well, you know what, you guys proved right off the bat that if you can do that, you can do anything.
Aw, thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
I wasn't there for that one, so I'm allowed to say stuff like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
We've punished you now, too, so.
Exactly.
Fine. Oh, yeah. All kinds of stuff that I didn't really want to watch, but. But I do it anyhow.
And then stuff you did want to watch. Yeah. And then we had the October challenge, which was a challenge.
That was a challenge, especially given the fact that I was packing and moving.
You were moving.
And he was ahead of us.
Yeah.
He still wound up watching them faster than we did.
That's because I was committed. I was committed to getting at least one in a night. And when I had time to watch more than one, I'd watch more than one.
Yeah, he movie Usain Bolted ahead of us.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, I don't know. I might need a little jolt from recall, but I'm pretty sure I've been Jason. Names are hard.
I'm still Sam.
I'm pretty sure I'm Trish.
And we're out of here.
Bye-bye, everybody.
is 18 credits, please.
Sue me, dickhead.
We hope you enjoyed the ride.